Okay, good, thank you. Okay, so I'll just say the verse again. So the third verse in the description of the Sachisya Lakshanani is Shanto Danto Anasuyuhu Sharanamupagataha Shastra Vishwasa Shali. That is the third one. So Shanto Dantoho. So Shantaha is one who is endowed with a Shama, and Dantaha is one who is endowed with a Dama. So Dama is very necessary for us to achieve Shama. Dama means the control of Indriyas. Without the control of Indriyas, Shama, the control of mind, cannot happen. And without the control of the mind, one can never get to the Jnana Yoga. Why? Because when the mind is distracted and tempted with the day-to-day circumstances or personal likes and dislikes, wants, hatred, and the mind is always revolving around those, there is no way anyone can attend a Vedanta class or a Vedanta teaching and absorb what the Guru is teaching. So, the most important qualification is for the disciple to reduce the involvement, the mental involvement in the exterior sphere. When the exterior sphere, whatever is happening in it, does not really bother the mind is relatively calm. But the problem is that we are living in the exterior sphere. We are living with the family. We are living, working a job. We have friends. We have the social circle. We have so many issues. We have credit cards. We have bills to pay. So many things that keep on bothering us on a daily basis. So how is it possible for us to control that mind, to not let any of these affect the mind? For that, again, one has to go back to the practice of the Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga. All the Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga, this Bhakti and Ashtanga Yoga together. So the Bhakti and Ashtanga Yoga together, when practiced very diligently, will give the Indriya Nigraham and also Mano Nigraham. And Mano Nigraham actually comes from Indriya Nigraham only. So the practice of Ashtanga Yoga, which we have discussed fairly in detail, plus the Upasana Yoga, coming together, they give the necessary environment to practice Shama and Dhamma. So you can practically experience this. When we talked about it in Pranayama and Pratyahara, in one of the previous shlokas, Pranayamam Pratyaharam Mityanitya Viveka Vicharam, when we talked about that Pranayama and Pratyahara, specifically about Pranayama, I told you how Pranayama, which is the control of the breath, is the prerequisite for control of the mind. Breath and Manas, the Shvasa, the Prana, and the Manas, the mind, they go together. So our rishis found out that when you control the breath, you can control the mind. You can actually see this. When not everybody may know the techniques of various different types of pranayama, but at least a simple pranayama people know. That is why modern psychologists also, they say, when you are agitated or when you become angry or when you are really sad or whatever, take 10 deep breaths. And then slowly you can see that that overpowering emotion will just dissipate and will slowly fade away. So that pranayama has that power to control the mind. And that pranayama is incorporated in a lot of our religious practices. But the only thing is we just do it as a ritual, not as a anga to control our mind. In the rituals, we have a ceremony called a Digbandhanam. So Dishovadhnami, when we say Dishovadhnami, all the dasha dishas, we are shutting off and we are sitting there and we are saying, now I am completely involved in the karma, the devotional karma that I am doing. And only at the end, I will say Digbandhanam or Digvimokam, I will do. So when we do that Digbandhanam, it is largely a symbolic gesture for us. We do Digbandhanam, but the next moment we start worrying or talking about, hey, this is not there, that is not there, did you do this, did you take care of this in the middle of the puja? So many other businesses will be happening. So when we do that Dishovadhnami, one has to do it along with that pranayama and mudra pradarshanam, all that is geared towards really controlling the indriyas and controlling the mind. In fact, even the posture that is recommended for doing all these religious ceremonies, we normally sit in what is called the Padmasanam or Siddhasanam. So this Padmasanam or Siddhasanam, what it does is if you properly sit in the prescribed posture, the end of one's heel, the bottom of the heel touches the portion between the genitals and the excretory organ. It presses against that heel. When we sit properly in the prescribed posture, it presses against that region. And that posture in yoga is called Mulabandham. So when we sit in that Mulabandham, automatically it is one of the techniques to control the indriyas. So when the Mulabandham is properly done, it is taught in Hatha Yoga. So this Mulabandha, Uddiyana Bandha, and Jalandhara Bandham, all those bandhas are taught. So when that Mulabandha is done, that all the indriya shakti, the prana shakti is contained within. It does not go out. But that asanam also we don't properly do. We sit however we want. We sit, you know, in different, all kinds of different postures. So every step that is designed within our practices is designed so that they are conducive to this control of the mind. So this pranayam, this mulabandham, the achamanam that we do, the sankalpam that we do, everything is geared towards keeping that mind focused on that one vastu that we are doing the upasana of. So all these practices, when done properly, with the proper understanding, with the proper performance of the yogic techniques within them, there is the religion part of it, but there is also a yogic part of it. The only when we understand and properly perform those yogic parts, they will actually start giving the desired effect. The bhakti part, how it affects the mind, is that when you are focused completely on the object of your worship with immense love and devotion, that kind of consumes your mind. That overwhelming power of the devotion that consumes one's mind, and that also will help in focusing the mind and not letting it go anyway. But for that, it cannot be a mechanical process. That real emotional love, bond, devotion, it should be there overwhelmingly, so that it kind of ties the mind and just arrests the mind and keeps it there. So if neither that is there and nor the yoga prakriya is known and practiced, then that entire ritual just becomes a mechanical ritual without much result. So to achieve this shantaha shama and dantaha dama, we need to properly understand the karma yoga, upasana yoga and the ashtanga yoga parts and properly implement them whenever we do our rituals or meditation or whatever it is. So then slowly that starts giving us the shanta and danta. But along with that, that vairagyam and vivekam are extremely important. We cannot keep on desiring every single thing in the world and expect to perform all these yogic and devotional techniques and expect to achieve success. That is why Acharya said, pranayamam pratyaharam nitya nitya vaveka vichara. So along with pranayama pratyahara techniques of the Ashtanga yoga, that viveka and vairagya must always be cultivated. If they are not cultivated, these again will not be effective in controlling either the indriyas or the mind. So such mind when controlled, such indriyas when controlled, become ready for receiving jnanam. And that is the essential quality of a shishya, of a disciple, specifically the disciple who wants to attain Atma Jnanam, go into the Jnana Yoga. That is Shantaha and Dantaha. Any questions on those?
Namaste Guru Garu, you are here. Not questions, but I was reading Sri Mahasannidhanam's life history. There they mentioned how Mahasannidhanam used to sit in Padmasana for hours when he starts the puja until the end. And I saw one of the videos as well. So probably I can, as you are saying, I can imagine the posture of Sannidhanam, how he was sitting by doing the puja of either Abhishekam or any Chandramodishwara Aradhana, mm-hmm. without even moving, just like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah, in fact, Mahasannidhanam's guru, Abhinava Vidyatirtha Swami, he is known, really well known for his yogic powers. Abhinava Vidyatirtha Mahaswamiji, when he used to sit for meditation, and his guru Chandrasekhar Bharati Swamiji, both of them are such adepts in yoga that the moment they sit at some place in meditation, they simply get absorbed. And it is not even doing an activity. It is like simply absorption. The moment they sit somewhere, that's it. Their mind used to completely get absorbed. And it used to be hours. And in case of Chandrasekhar Bharati Swamiji, it used to be days before anybody could dare to go and wake up Swamiji from that samadhi. So that instantaneous absorption into that upasya vastu, they used to be able to achieve. That is really, really an inspiration for us, that this is not a theoretical science. This is not some stories that we are talking about. There are people who until very recently, even today, walk among us, who are able to show that this is what our legacy has given us, and this is what works, and this is real, and this is not just a, you know, eyewash story. So that is Shantaha and Dantaha. Any other questions? Next, anasuyuhu. Anasuyuhu. Asuya is jealousy. Anasuyuhu is one who is not jealous. We have, I think, already spoken about it a little in the previous And the first padam, when we talked about the first padam, I talked about this jealousy between students, jealousy that a student might have about the guru and all that. So not a lot is required to talk about here, except that this emotion of jealousy is really, really, really a contributing factor to the downfall. Because there is absolutely no comparison between any disciple with any other disciple, or any disciple with the guru for that matter, obviously not. So comparing oneself with the other disciple for anything is really just a waste of time and energy. One can look at other disciples to derive motivation, to derive a sort of a renewed interest in what one is supposed to do. But there is absolutely no point having a jealous attitude towards anybody. Whether it is someone who knows better, whether it is someone who is seemingly closer to the guru, all the kinds of doubts and concerns that a typical shishya or a disciple may entertain in the mind, they are only really for the downfall, because that will take away from the shantatvam and dantatvam, the shama and dama, it will be taken away. So every disciple must always think that the guru is my guru and my guru only. I don't care how many other disciples are there. My guru is there, I am there, there is that sacred bond between us. My guru knows what is best for me, my guru will take care of me, my guru is teaching me, my guru is guiding me in the right path. And my guru is guiding me in the right path as it is applicable to me. That may not be applicable to the other person, may not be applicable to the third person. So there is no point really comparing notes and saying, okay, did you get this far? Did you get that far? Or did he give you two mantras? He gave me only one mantra. Doesn't matter. It doesn't work that way. So Swami Chinmayananda used to say, these children are not vessels to be filled. Children are lamps to be lit. So that applies to the two shishyas also. The guru is not aiming at filling up the shishya with all the information that he knows. That is not what he is trying to do. What the guru is trying to do is to light that lamp of Chaitanyam finally in that shishya, and make him equal to that same Atma Chaitanyam that the guru is, and his guru is, and his guru is. That is all he is trying to do. Anything else that is being taught is only just for that one final result, which is the awakening of the Atma Chaitanyam in the shishya. So there is really no comparison about the amount of information. No comparing he's teaching that person this person, I'm not being told all that. This is absolutely not necessary at all. Because what one deserves, the guru knows and the guru gives. Only thing is, we should always be thinking and striving towards, am I being deserving of what the guru is giving? Am I deserving it? My guru is gracing me with so many things. Am I living my life in a deserving way? So that's all there is. So this asuya, any type of jealousy or comparison or competition, it doesn't work. Especially it doesn't work in the realm of Vedanta, where the goal is to get away from the trigunas. And this asuya is the very manifestation of the rajogunam and tamogunam. So this anasuyuhu, as I said, paripakvamatehe satrutshrutam janayet atmadhiyam shruteirvachaha. So one who has done so much punyam, that shishya, that disciple that has done so much punyam and achieved the required qualifications early on, the guru gives advanced lessons immediately. But for someone who is still in the kindergarten classes, the guru will slowly bring him up and bring up that shishya. But there is only one sankalpam in guru's mind. And what is that? That is the welfare of all the disciples. So when the welfare of all the disciples is the only sankalpam, it doesn't matter what is being taught to whom, because the guru is only looking at your welfare, your dharma. So that anasuyuhu is very, very important. The absence of jealousy or any other unnecessary competitive characteristics. So shanto, danto, anasuyuhu. Any questions on that?
Oh, one question, Guru Garu. So, Guru gives what a disciple deserves. But isn't it disciple's responsibility to ask that I need this? Am I eligible? Can a disciple can request Guru for that?
Absolutely. But you should. But you as a disciple should already. Or also be ready for a no as an answer.
Correct.
And be ready to abide by that.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Namaskar.
So you can go and ask the doctor whatever medicine, you know, you have looked up on the internet. You know, is this good for me? Is this good for me? But also expect to say, you know, get a no sometimes from the doctor saying, no, that doesn't make sense for you.
One question, Guru Gar.
Okay.
Does it need to be even like, because like Guru knows what is needed or what is the disciple can take? Does it need to be even asked? Is that like?
Yeah, it needs to be asked. It needs to be asked because Guru is not only looking for qualification, the Guru is looking for passion. The guru is also looking for passion. One may be fully qualified, but if that person has no interest in learning more, if that hunger is not there, the guru is not going to, you know, run behind that person and say, okay, you know, I will give you this, I will give you this, I'll teach you this, I'll teach you that. No, he's not going to say it. So you need to have the passion, but when I keep saying you, it's not you, any disciple for that matter. So the disciple needs to have the passion and also understand, you know, what is a reasonable thing for me to ask. Now I cannot be in a kindergarten and ask for a PhD lesson to be taught to me. So that's not going to work. But sometimes we may not know what is kindergarten, what is PhD. That time you can definitely ask. No, Rugaru, I learned about this. I read about this. I knew about this. Okay, I already have this. So I'm showing the evidence that I am deserving what has been taught to me or what has been given to me. I'm practicing this. I'm doing all the anushtanam that is required of me. Now, if you think I can get the next one, can I get it? Absolutely. Because one must ask, because if the disciple does not show interest, the guru is going to just stay calm. That's it. I mean, he is going to give things only based on both qualification and passion. Even if passion is there, if qualification is not there, Guru is not going to give it. If qualification is fully there, if passion is not there, maybe Guru sometimes will say, you are ready for this. No, why don't you go do this? But not always. So one needs to have that ever alive hunger to learn. No, having the Guru in life is the greatest of the blessings. So how much we take advantage of that is our responsibility.
So Guru Garu, can we relate the way Drona taught Arjuna how to put the arrows in the darkness and etc. So in the same regard, because Arjuna had the passion to learn and Drona thought he is qualified and passionate, so he just taught him. And he didn't teach the same to others where they were not kind of interested or qualified.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Correct. Okay, any other questions on this? Okay. So, Shanto, Danto, Anasuyuhu, Sharanam Upagataha. Sharanam Upagataha. So, what is this word, Sharanam Upagataha? What is Gataha?
Past, the one that's already passed.
The one had passed.
That is Gatham. Gataha. Gataha is Pullingam. Gatham is neutral. So what is Gataha?
Already the one who has gone.
One who has gone. Gataha means one who has gone. Upagataha means what is Upa?
Near.
Close, near.
So Upagataha is one who has gone near. So one who has gone near. Not gone near whom? The Guru. So one who has gone near the Guru, how? Sharanam Upagataha. Sharanam Upagataha means one who has gone near the Guru with the attitude of surrender. Attitude of self-surrender. We saw this in Tyaktamanaha. So this attitude of surrender, we have seen in the Tyaktamanaha characteristic also. So this concept of Sharanagati is very, very unique and very important for that Guru-Shishya relationship. So I told already how the Sharanagati of a Shishya to the Guru is different from any other Sharanagati. So when the Sharanagati is done by the Shishya to the Guru, essentially what that Shishya is saying is that everything including my body, mind and intellect are yours. And I am ready to be acting as your instrument, the instrument in your hand. Because if the clay has its own mind and wants to become its own shape, there is nothing a potter can do. Unless the clay completely surrenders itself to the potter, then the potter, who has the extreme skill and knowledge of how to mold the clay into a proper shape, can be done by the potter. But if clay has its own mind and it knows how I should become or how I should not become, then there is very limited what the potter can do. So similarly, that example is given in the case of the disciple and the guru. So unless that surrender is done, that manasa, vacha, karmana, the trikarana shuddhya, that surrender is done, the guru may be able to help a little bit, but when he senses that resistance, that internal resistance, there is nothing else the guru can do to help. So that sharanam, that sharanagati cannot be just verbal or vocal. It has to come from within and it has to be very deep-rooted. Because unless it is deep-rooted and comes from within, one will not be able to express express it in a way that conveys that sharanagati. Because no matter how much we say with the mouth, how much we say with our actions, unless that deep-rooted sharanagati is there inside us, the truth shows. So when the truth shows and the guru knows that really there is no attitude of sharanagati in this person, then the guru also is he is also sort of neutral towards that person. Okay, I will teach you as long as to the extent that you are interested and you show the surrender, I will teach you. So he will not reject anybody. He will say, to the extent that you show the interest and surrender, I will teach you. So if you have that full attitude of complete 100% surrender, I will teach you everything. I will teach you, I will give you everything that I have. The guru is ready. But that only, so when I said that passion has to show through, the passion and qualification, that passion here converts into that surrender. So let me tell you a little bit about Tarka Shastra here. Tarka Shastra, somebody asked me the question, I think last time, what is Tarka Shastra? This Indian logic. So this in Tarka Shastra, there is what is called a there is what is called a Swarupa Sambandha. In Tarka Shastra, there is what is called a Swarupa Sambandha. Did I ever tell you about the Swarupa Lakshanam and Tatastha Lakshanam? I think in the Tattva Bodha class, I have taught you that. Does anyone remember?
Sorry, Guru, I do not remember.
Okay. Maybe, I don't know. I don't remember if I taught it or not. So there is what is called a Swarupa Lakshanam and Tatastha Lakshanam. So the difference between a Swarupa Lakshanam and a Tatastha Lakshanam is that when talking about the Lakshanas of Parabrahma, this comes in the Tarka Shastra. So this Tatastha Lakshanam means a temporary attribute of something. A Swarupa Lakshanam is a permanent attribute of something. For example, if you have to identify a house, you have to give the address, the identification of a house to that person. And you have to go to such and such a house. And if you say that, go to the house on which a crow is sitting. So when you say, go to the house on which a crow is sitting, how long is that crow going to sit there? It is not going to sit there for a long time. So maybe when you saw it, the crow was sitting there, but by the time this person goes there, the crow would have flew away. Now, when he has to go and identify that house, he won't be able to identify it because the identification factor that you have given for that house is not a permanent identification factor, only a temporary identification factor. Understood?
Yes.
That is the Tatastha Lakshan. But instead of that, you describe the house, such and such a house, the front will be painted that way, it will have four pillars in front of it, the front door is like this, there will be all these other things that are more permanent structures, and the roof will be like this, of this color. And this will be the third house from the entrance of the street and all that. So all those are more permanent lakshanas. Those cannot be easily changed. I mean, we can argue that paint can be changed and all that, but for the argument's sake, what I'm saying is that, so those are more permanent lakshanas. So when you describe something with the permanent lakshanas, that is called a Swarupa Lakshana. When you describe something with the impermanent or temporary lakshanas, that is called a Tatastha Lakshanam. So Vedanta says for Brahman, all these names and forms and all these various different names and devatas and avataras and all those things are just tadastha lakshanas. That is not the real swarupa lakshana of Brahman. So that is how the argument goes in the Tarka Shastra. So why we are, I'm telling you here is that Shastra says this swarupa lakshanam, the one condition, the one lakshana, the characteristic that defines a true disciple is this sharanam upagata. That sense of sharanagati is this swarupa lakshanam of a sachishya. Any other lakshanam you talk about, those can be treated as tatastha lakshanani, but this swarupa sambandham, this swarupa lakshanam is the swarupa lakshanam. The sharanagati tattvam, the sharanam upagataha is the swarupa lakshanam of the shishya, of the disciple. So, that swarupa lakshanam means the permanent attribute that stays with that object and the attribute with which that object can be identified accurately is the swarupa lakshanam. So if you take away that swarupa lakshanam from that object, you cannot identify that object at all. If you take away the swarupa lakshanam from an object, you will not be able to identify the object. Such a lakshanam is called a swarupa lakshanam. Hopefully I'm not confusing you. I don't want to go too deep into the Tarka Shastra, but little bit. Introduction.
Guru, one question. I don't know if it makes sense or not, but apologies. So when Krishna tells Arjuna about I am this, I am that, and all, like I am the month of Margashirsha, I am Vasuki. So he is describing about the tatastha lakshanas there.
That is all lakshanas. Yes. Anything that you see in any of our scriptures, other than the Sachidananda Swarupam, that is described in the Upanishad. That is all tatastha lakshanam. Because for Parabrahman, you cannot say that Brahman is of this shape, of this name, of this characteristic, of this color, of this composition. You cannot say. Krishna can say that Adityanam Aham Vishnuhu, Yodisham Ravi Ramshuman, Rudranam Shankarashchasmi. All these things he can say. But we cannot say that Vishnu is Parabrahma. Shankara is Parabrahma. That cannot be said because these are all treated as Tatastha Lakshanam. Because if you treat a Tatastha Lakshanam as a Swarupa Lakshanam, what is the problem? The nature of this Tatastha Lakshanam is that it will go away at one point. But the Swarupa Lakshanam is something that should never go away, that will never go away. And after so much discussion and debate in the Tarka Shastra, in the Vedanta, the Tarka side of the Vedanta, Acharyas came out with the Lakshanam, the Swarupa Lakshanam of Parabrahma, which is only Sat, Chit, Ananda. Why? They did not come about it independently. This is based on what the Shruti is. So similarly, here the disciple's Swarupa Lakshanam is this Sharanagati Tattva. When this particular Swarupa Lakshanam is missing and all other Lakshanams are there, In the language of Tarka Shastra, it is called Avyapti. What is it called? Avyapti. When the Swarupa Lakshanam is not there, but all the other different Lakshanas are there, that is called Avyapti. But when this Swarupa Lakshanam is there and this Tatastha Lakshanam is there, but all these combination of lakshanas are not enough to describe this particular entity, but they can also be used to describe any other entity, then that is called ativyapti. There is avyapti and there is ativyapti. But when the perfect Swarupa Lakshanam is there and the Tatastha Lakshana is there and they can be used to describe only one and one object only, that is called Vyapti. There are three terms, Vyapti, Avyapti, Ativyapti. Let me give you an example. For example, you have to describe a cow. When you have to describe a cow, when you say a cow is an animal with four legs, is that true?
It's true but not sufficient.
It is true but not sufficient. That is called ativyapti because there are other four-legged animals also. So when you say, when you describe something with a lakshanam, that lakshanam, when it describes that entity, but also applies to other entities, that is called ativyapti. That is considered as one of the doshas of describing something. You have to be precise in the description. So when you have to be precise in the description, you cannot have ativyapti dosha. So it is not enough to say that the cow is a four-legged animal. Right? It is not enough to say that. But when you say, for example, a cow is a, the cow has two legs. When the cow, when you say the cow has two legs, when you look at a particular cow, maybe it has lost two of its legs. And you look at that particular cow and say you say that the cow has two legs, then you get the avyapti dosham, because in that jati called cows, that two-leggedness is not a natural lakshana. So you are describing something in the jati that is not a natural lakshanam of that jati. Whereas previously, you have described something in this jati that is also a lakshanam of other jatis. That is called ativyapti. This is called avyapti. Avyapti means it does not exist in this jati. But you are probably seeing an exception specimen and you are saying the cow has two legs. But that does not belong in this jati. Then how do you describe a cow? When you have to describe a cow, we must have all done it in our primary school, elementary school, how to describe a cow, we must have done it. But if you say an animal with four legs, you get ativyapti dosham. If you say an animal with horns, you get ativyapti dosham. If you say an animal that gives milk, you get ativyapti dosham. You get if you say an animal that has four legs and a tail and all the other things, you get ativyapti dosham. So how do you describe a cow? What is that defining factor, one defining factor that you cannot find in any other entity in this entire creation that can describe a cow? That is called a vyapti. That is called vyapti. And in the shastras, it is described that a cow is an animal that with all these things, all the horns and the four legs and the tail and all these things, but it also has what is called this dewlap. Dewlap means a saggy skin that comes in front. A specific kind of saggy skin that comes in the front that does not come for any other animal. You take buffaloes, you take oxen, nothing, no other animal gets it. Only cows get it. So in the shastras, they say that this animal, which has all the other lakshanas, but also has this particular lakshanam called a dewlap, that is a cow. I am gauhu. So that is how a cow is described by the Shastra, in the Tarka Shastra. So similarly, what is that one defining factor of a disciple? It could have any other, he or she could have any other characteristics or not have other characteristics. But what is that one defining characteristic of the disciple? What is that Swarupa Lakshanam? So what Lakshanam has that Swarupa Sambandham with the disciple, with the Satchishya? That is the Sharanagati.
Sharanagati.
This Sharanam Upagataha, this Sharanagati is the defining factor. But as I said, that Sharanagati cannot happen with words. It cannot happen with outward actions. That Sharanagati has to be sort of deep rooted. Nirantara Sharanagati. We need to control our mind, control our buddhi, control our manas. And the moment we get that thought, you know what is the big deal in this person called Guru? No, he is also living like me. He is also living in a householder life. He is also like me. Maybe he must have read 4 more books than me. What is the big deal? But once you get that thought, you have lost that Sharanagati Tattva. This Shastra gives a funny shloka to highlight this difference. It says, Kaka Krishnaha Pika Krishnaha Kobedha Pika Kakayoho. Kaka Krishnaha, what does it mean?
The crow is also black and the kokila is also black.
Cuckoo is also black. The cuckoo is also black, the crow is also black. So kobhedaha pikaka kayoho. What is the big difference? They both look the same. They both live in the same place. They both behave the same way. So what is the big difference in that way? Kobhedaha pikaka kayoho.
When they open the mouth?
When they open the mouth, the difference will be known. Vasantakale samprapte kakaha pikaha pikaha. So when the Vasanta Kalam comes and when it is time to open the mouth, then one will be able to easily see the difference between a crow and a cuckoo. So similarly, this is not so much about opening the mouth. It doesn't mean that nobody should open the mouth around. That's not the point. The point is that the Guru has that intrinsic quality of Gurutvam that a Shishya cannot get that easily. One has to strive. Eventually, with the Guru's grace, maybe that Shishya also can become a Guru. But that comparison won't work. Without that comparison, when that Sharanagati Tattvam is there completely, and for that Sharanagati Tattvam to work, always that mind has to be focused on the Guru's path. What is the path that this guru, the guru is deciding for? What is the path that the guru is dictating for me? There are stories of great shishyas, great disciples that have sort of surrendered everything. No, their overwhelming thought is that, why do I get up for the guru? Why do I eat for the guru? Why do I earn for the guru? Why do I live for the guru? That is how Janaka acted. When there was a great sage called Ashtavakra, and he once visited this king, Janaka's kingdom. And in that kingdom, Janaka was having a great debate, a great sabha. I told you about the Shastrartha Sabhas, right, previously. So he was having this Shastrartha Sabha. When he was having the Shastrartha Sabha, this Ashtavakra came. And Ashtavakra came, so he was also sitting there. And Janaka was asking all kinds of Vedanta questions to all the scholars. And finally, there was this question of, you know, the realization, release from bondage. And he asked the question, who can guarantee to me that I can achieve that realization? I can achieve that relief from my bondage. And nobody could guarantee that. But Ashtavakra said, I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee to teach you the path to moksha through which you can achieve moksha. Then Janaka was in a hurry. Oh, so please teach me, teach me, teach me. But Ashtavakra said, I have some conditions for me to teach you. If you fulfill those conditions, I will teach you. And Janaka said, what are those conditions? And he said, you need to leave your kingdom. You need to leave everything. You need to leave your riches. You need to leave your wealth. You need to leave your subjects. You need to leave all the royal clothes that you are wearing. You need to leave your vehicles. You need to leave your chariot. Leave everything. And then come walking bare feet to my ashram. Then I will teach you. And he just left. Then Janaka thought and thought and thought and thought. And finally one day he decided, yep, this is what I want. I don't care about anything else. So he left everything, walked bare feet to Ashtavakra's ashram. And he sat at the feet of Ashtavakra. And he said, not only I have left everything there, but I am taking all that and putting them on your feet. I am leaving them all, not somewhere else, but at your feet. So, from this moment onwards, my kingdom is yours, my subjects are yours, my wealth is yours, my riches are yours, my royal paraphernalia is yours, my throne is yours, my body is yours, my mind is yours, and my intellect is yours. I am surrendering at your feet. And of course, Ashtavakra teaches him, and that is how Janaka becomes a great Mahajnani. And once Janaka becomes a Mahajnani, Ashtavakra says, now that you have surrendered all these things to me, do you understand that these are not yours, including your own body, mind, and intellect? These are not yours. And Janaka says, yes, I perfectly understand. And I'm extremely happy about it. Then I will give all these back to you. Go and from now on start ruling the kingdom as my representative. From now on, Janaka, you will rule this kingdom of Mithila as my representative. Because I am ordering you to do so. And Janaka was so happy to have been instructed by the guru to do so, and then went back to Mithila and he ruled the kingdom. Not only ruled the kingdom, but in the most benevolent way possible. Because with that Atmajnana, the benefit of that Atmajnana that he achieved, received from Ashtavakra, from then on, his rule was the most benevolent. And of course, he personally benefited so much, and he is considered as one of the Mahajnanis, Janaka. So that is the surrender that is required by the disciple to receive that complete Atmajnanam. So only to the extent that what the disciple surrenders to the guru, to that extent one will receive the benefit or the jnana from the guru. So that is why this Sharanagati is called the Swarupa Lakshanam of the Shishya, of the Satshishya. Okay, maybe I'll talk a little more about this next class, but for now we'll stop. Any other questions if you have, let me know.
Guru, so is it fair to say that this is the most important Lakshana, and having this Lakshana with Guru's blessings, we can get the other things if we constantly follow this, the Saranagati?
Absolutely, absolutely. The mental attitude of Saranagati is completely ingrained within you, then there is no resistance within the body, mind, or intellect to follow what the Guru says. And as you keep removing that resistance and absorbing what the Guru is saying and living the way that the Guru is teaching, then Guru will be able to see that change and see that you are taking a shape that the Guru intends you to take. And that is an indication to the Guru that, yes, this disciple deserves a lot more and is showing that passion, showing that Saranagati, showing that he or she is deserving, and the Guru will offer everything. The Guru never wants to hold back anything. He hates holding back. Guru just wants to give everything to a deserving Shishya who is passionate. If that one disciple is there for the Guru, that Guru is the happiest to you. But most of the time, the Guru is just searching for that one disciple who has that Sampurna Saranagati. And lifetimes after lifetimes of Gurus have gone in that search. Only once in a blue moon, that kind of a Shishya comes along, like how Vivekananda walked into Ramakrishna's life. Ramakrishna said, finally you came. That as soon as Vivekananda walked in, that is what Ramakrishna said, finally you came. So that is what he was desperately looking for. And when that person walked in, Guru was so happy. So that is the one defining quality, that Swarupa Lakshanam, that will absolutely get every other qualification. Absolutely. Any other questions? Okay, stop here. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahavi, Shanti, Shanti, Shri Guru Bhyavaram.
Namaskar.
Namaskar, Guru Garu.
Namaskar, Guru Garu.